Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Is the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255. The lead story to me is to show you how melted down this country is becoming. I mean, we all know about the big stories, but there's a story at the top of my website, michaelsavage.com, that's an exclusive to this show. The San Francisco Police Department is forcing detectives to undergo brainwashing by a transgender detective. Now, this transgender detective did not pass the lieutenant's exam. She failed it. He failed it. It's a she-to-he detective. Failed the lieutenant's exam, was promoted anyway, and now they're forcing the other detectives to pay attention to sensitivity issues of transgender detectives. If it gets any sicker than this, I'd like to know where. This has ramifications for the rest of the nation because this is total insanity. And you can see the memorandum sent to me anonymously by someone in the police department, who I will not disclose. And it says, transgender training for the Investigations Bureau. Lieutenant Stephen Thorne, that's a female-to-male detective, is facilitating transgender community awareness training. Below are the dates, times, and location of the training offered. Of course, they have to go. Please direct your lieutenants to have all members pick a date for training. Sort of like toilet training for adults, only in this case, it's very serious business. Now, we have a homicide epidemic in San Francisco. We have a gang problem in San Francisco. We have a bum problem in San Francisco. We have a mayor problem in San Francisco. We have a supervisor problem in San Francisco. It's a city out of control. We have government anarchy, and these psychotic SOBs are wasting detectives' time in sensitivity training for a transgendered lieutenant. The sign-up lists are due in room 400 by Monday, January 5th, 2009. And we ought to note that space is limited to 35 members per class. It's a class now to teach normal men how to have sensitivity to a psychopathic sex change operative who should be in a mental hospital. Transgender lieutenant story. A transgender sergeant in the SF Police Department was recently promoted to lieutenant from an exam list. The list consists of the names of officers who took the last lieutenant's examination. The list is 3 years old, and on the last day before the list was to expire, the transgender sergeant was chosen from the list to be a new lieutenant. Name of transgender sergeant, Stephen Thorne, formerly Stephanie Thorne. Ms. Mr. Thorne was 49th on the list in numerical order. She was chosen over 18 other sergeants and inspectors that had scored higher on the exam. Not verified. Officer Thorne was on light restricted duty due to an ailment or injury. When Officer Thorne was promoted, she was instantly healed and on full, unrestricted duty. Interesting information. The inspectors and sergeants that will be working with the new transgender lieutenant, as well as other command staff, have been required to take mandatory transgender training. This means that approximately 210 inspectors will each spend 4 hours of mandatory time in a diversity training class specifically to deal with this new transgender lieutenant. This works out to about 820 hours of combined training time that will pull inspectors over important cases, including the 98 homicides that occurred in 2008. The approximate cost in man-hours based on average inspector pay will be over $50,000 for this special training. The new Lieutenant Thorne will be the instructor leading the mandatory enforced transgender diversity training, see attached. Now, I got to tell you something. If I were the inspectors being forced to do this, I would as a group refuse to go. I would not let myself be brainwashed by this freak. Now, I did this. When I worked at a local radio station, they forced the entire staff to take diversity training. I was the only one who challenged the freaks giving the diversity training. I fought them every step of the way. All the other big mouths, including ex-Marines and ex-this and ex-that, sat there quietly and said nothing. And I challenged them every step of the way, and they never had diversity training again in that radio station. Never. And the police should do the same thing. The military should do this. It's enough with the freaks ruling these places. Topic number two on the Savage Nation is the Bernie Madoff case. The Bernie Madoff case, as you know, Bernie Madoff is the swindler-in-chief of the United States of America, according to the indictment that was handed down by the government. On December 11th, Bernie Madoff was arrested and charged in a criminal complaint that was presented before U.S. Magistrate Douglas Eaton. He told the investigators that he had stolen, through a Ponzi scheme, about $50 billion. That you know about. Now, the following bail conditions were set at the presentation. A $10 million personal recognizance bond to be secured by the defendant's Manhattan apartment and to be co-signed by four financially responsible persons, including the defendant's wife, surrender of his passport, travel restricted, blah, 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 blah. Well, it turns out that the defendant's bail conditions had to be modified because the defendant, Bernie Madoff, could not obtain two of the required four co-signers of the bond. As a consequence, so-called Judge Gorenstein issued a modified bail, which permitted the defendant, Bernie Madoff, to stay at his house, which is an outrage, by the way. It turns out that this swindler-in-chief violated the terms of his bail. Not only did he take advantage of the people by staying in his apartment when he should be in prison, but it turns out that the defendant sent a package containing a total of 13 watches, one diamond necklace, an emerald ring, and two sets of cufflinks. The government has been informed that the value of those items could exceed $1 million. Two other packages containing a diamond bracelet, a gold watch, a diamond Cartier watch, a diamond Tiffany watch, four diamond brooches, a jade necklace, and other assorted jewelry were also sent to Madoff's relatives. The contents of those packages have been recovered by the government. But listen to this now. Here's the punchline. In addition, as indicated, the defendant and or his wife sent at least two additional packages, contents unknown, to the defendant's brother and an unidentified couple in Florida. Ladies and gentlemen of the Savage jury, should Bernie Madoff immediately be remanded to prison in New York City, yes or no? Question number two, which goes back to the first story, should the police detectives in San Francisco refuse to accommodate this transgendered freak and the psychopath running the city, any twosome newsome, and simply go on strike and not submit themselves to transgender training? The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. This is the Savage Nation. I'll be right back. Savage. Well, I think we can move on. I'm talking about the enforced transgender training in the San Francisco Police Department. Apparently, no cops in San Francisco have the guts to call this show, which explains to you why we have a homicide epidemic in San Francisco and why they're willing to bend down and roll over for a transgendered freak show imposed upon them by the sickest city administration in the history of this great city. And so I don't care about the topic. If you're willing to be, shall I say, let me use the right word here since it's a family show, turned into a capon by this transgender administration. Go ahead. What do I care? I did your work for you. I try to show America how you and the SFPD are being abused by these so-called liberals, and you don't want to call the show on it? That's your problem. Deal with it. Then roll over for a transgendered freak. I don't care. I don't care about Israel. I don't care about the police. I don't care about the Republicans. I really don't care about anything right now. Why should I care? So let's talk about something else. Should marijuana be legalized? George Soros, as you well know, is behind the legalization of marijuana. And liberal politicians around the country now are emboldened by what they perceive to be a more permissive Obama era, and they want to legalize pot. Now, we all know two things. We all know there are too many people in prison. We also know the drug war has failed. But we also must recognize that marijuana is the most dangerous of all drugs, because it is an entry-level drug. It is the single most important drug for bringing your child into the world of drugs. It is the single most dangerous drug of all. And so if you don't remember that, then remember that the marijuana that your children are smoking is not the marijuana you old potheads smoked. Today's pot is about 40 times more dangerous and more toxic than the pot you smoked in the 1960s. So if you care to talk about this, covering all of those angles, you can call the Savage Nation at 1-800-449-8255. Still not one call from KNEW. And that explains to you how demoralized the San Francisco Police Department has become. They won't even call about the transgender training in the inspector's department. But look, here's a city where a Jewish activist gets thrown down an elevator shaft on the way to an Arab language class that was canceled suddenly, and the story is hushed up by the transgender newspaper editors. The story is hushed up by the brave men in the TV business. Here's an elevator murder mystery that the San Francisco homicide detectives hush up and toss away. No wonder they're going in for diversity training. That's about all they're capable of. I'm sure they'll get A's in that, not A's in solving homicides. I think San Francisco has the lowest percentage of solved homicides of any major city in the United States of America. We have a crisis in this city. The city's been run off the rails by any Twosome Newsome. If we lived in a sane nation, the federal government would intervene, as they have done in corrupt cities in the past, and they would take the city over and they'd put a magistrate in charge of running this city because the administrators can't run it. New York City, WOR. Matt, go ahead, please.
Hello, Mike. I just want to say I can't believe what I just heard. Why don't the Lieutenants Association go on strike?
I just told you, because the SFPD has been caponized. They have fundamentally been turned into geldings. The city administration is such a terrorist organization in favor of homosexuals, transgender rights, whatever, that the police themselves are terrified to stand up and speak out against this outrage, this brainwashing.
So what's next?
The real problem here is the police union is useless in San Francisco. The so-called police union is non-existent. The so-called police union in San Francisco is run by the same mentality that runs the Republican Party. They have moved so far to the other side, they're non-existent, in my opinion. I suggest you all go to michaelsavage.com and download the story because we're the only ones who have it. It's not on Drudge. It's not on Fox. It's not on any of my other favorite sites, and I go to all of them. I mean, I love all the websites out there that I go to. I go to Drudge. I go to Fox. I go to the New York Post. I go to WND. I go to Newsmax. I go to the New York Times. I go to, I'm looking down the site, Forbes occasionally, the Washington Times, World Tribune, the Daily News, and others. I enjoy all of them, and I learn from all of them. They're wonderful sites. But this story I have was sent to me anonymously, and I put it up on michaelsavage.com. Being a small website, occasionally we get an exclusive. This is an exclusive. It's an actual PDF of the memorandum forcing detectives to undergo brainwashing by a transgendered freak show. And this is an outrage. This is a city. Now, if you had a city that had solved its homicide epidemic, if you had a city where there was low crime, you could argue, well, all right, they could be sensitive to lieutenant, whatever. But it's a city that's in crisis, and this is what they're wasting their time on. Now, if it was limited to the SFPD, I wouldn't make it a national story. Remember, the show is a national show. But this is going on in every major police department in America. It's going on in the U.S. military. It's going on in every aspect of our country. We're being turned into a nation of imbeciles and maniacs, where the psychopaths are actually leading the parade. Albany, New York. John, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Mr. Savage, how are you? Quite a pleasure. I wanted to argue the fact that you commented that marijuana is an entry-level drug. Come on.
Is this the best you can do? I mean, you really must be stoned. I mean, you're taking 20, 30 seconds in between each statement. You're the best argument. You're best argument in America to ban pot. You know, the reason it's called dope is because of men like you. You can't even finish a paragraph. Every sentence you cut off for 10 seconds. What's wrong with you? Are your synapses jammed up with THC?
No. I think it's the delay on the telephone or something.
All right, let's get down to brass tacks. We've all heard the arguments that alcohol is bad. Agreed. We've all heard the arguments nicotine is bad. Agreed. It's not the same as marijuana.
But they're legal, and they're more an entry-level drug because they're more accessible.
However, alcohol, when you go buy a bottle of booze in a liquor store, it does not lead you into the world of drug abuse. The very same people who are selling your kid marijuana are also selling cocaine, speed, methamphetamine, cocaine, you name it.
Oh, I'm not
So it leads the child into the world of very dangerous hard drugs. It also, by the way, is not as benign as you may think. There are numerous scientific reports of absolute psychotic episodes being induced in children from the use of the new grade marijuana that's out there. I know you know that.
A lot stronger than it was, that's for damn sure.
Yeah, it's about 40 times stronger than the 60s. I don't think you also understand that marijuana causes lung cancer. Are you aware of that? That it's not this peaceful, loving herb? You know, we hear about cigarettes, which I abhor. I hate cigarettes. They killed my father. They killed my grandfather. I can't stand being in a room with them. But the fact of the matter is, I know people who smoke who are quite sane and do a wonderful job running businesses and whatnot. I can't say the same thing for people who smoke marijuana. They usually really wreck people.
I understand.
All right, again a delay. Again a delay. Houston, Texas. John, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, I don't think it is a gateway drug. I actually smoked a lot of cigarettes, about a pack and a half a day, and drank most of my life, legal life. And then I quit drinking and quit smoking cigarettes to smoke marijuana, and it's pretty much been left at that. I just got a raise today, and I don't know.
What's marijuana done for you?
Well, a couple of beers to do in the afternoon after getting up work a little bit.
So you're saying it helps you?
Oh, yeah.
It's helped your life. Marijuana's helped your life?
Well,
you're breaking up. I'm sorry. I would like to have heard the rest of the conversation. I don't know if it was your synapses misfiring or the telephone, but if it's the telephone, we can fix that. The synapses, unfortunately, we can't help you with. Chicago, Timothy, welcome to the show. You're on the Savage Nation.
How you doing? Everyone that disagrees with you is high or something? Is that it?
I mean, well, you certainly sound like you're high.
Okay, well, I guess I've smoked pot. I can tell you right now, the only reason it's a gateway drug is because it's illegal. If it wasn't,
so in other words, if it was legal, it would be perfectly fine. Then explain the 20% of psychotic episodes for marijuana use. Now that Obama is going to be president in a few short days, you're going to hear arguments for gays in the military, legalization of marijuana, a normalization of relations with Iran, Venezuela, and Cuba. In other words, the entire left-wing cabal is going to come out of the closet and start pushing their arguments. Now, I say let's listen to their arguments, but you better start listening to the counter-arguments. Let's focus on marijuana. Many of you are not aware of the medical dangers of marijuana because you say, hey, I feel good, it relaxes me. But let me give you some medical information that you're not going to get in the propaganda wars right now. And the biggest one is that marijuana is a general immunosuppressant. It suppresses the immune system. Now, regular smoking of marijuana, in fact, could aggravate or accelerate the very disorders that marijuana is being used to treat because it suppresses the immune system. Many of you don't know that. You should also understand that for patients with already weakened immune systems, this drug could be the tipping point that throws you over the edge by suppressing your immune system. Regular marijuana smoking materially affects the overall ability of the smoker's body to defend itself against infection. Why? It weakens various natural immune mechanisms, including macrophages, those are the killer cells. It weakens the all-important T cells. Now, you should understand this, that the immune effects are very strong. Marijuana use can accelerate the progression of HIV to full-blown AIDS. Marijuana can increase the occurrence of infections and Kaposi sarcoma in AIDS. But AIDS is not the only problem. Let's talk about the effects upon the psyche. Study after study after study shows that mental health is seriously affected by marijuana. Memory is affected by marijuana. I'm trying to save some youngsters out there who think that marijuana is cool and it's harmless. It is not. I believe marijuana is at the root of many mental disorders, and I am not alone. Study after study will support it. Acute toxic psychotic reactions have been shown with marijuana. Now, let's say you smoke pot and your palms get sweaty and you have a panic attack. Panic attacks are one of the very conditions that's being used experimentally to treat, and yet it provokes panic attacks in probably 18 to 20% of the users. Flashbacks, delusions, depersonalization, hallucinations, paranoia, depression, uncontrollable aggressiveness are all associated with marijuana use. Marijuana has long been known to trigger attacks of mental illness, such as bipolar or manic depressive psychosis and schizophrenia. You should understand that these connections with mental illness should make the use of marijuana very questionable for those already suffering from any of these mental problems, including clinical depression. Weigh these problems very carefully before you adopt marijuana and assume it's all good for you. What about short-term use of marijuana? How about driving on the marijuana? Marijuana impairs perception, it impairs judgment, it impairs thinking, it impairs memory, it impairs learning. Memory defects may persist for 6 weeks after the last use. Do you know that mental disorders connected with marijuana use merit their own category in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, the DSM-4, published by the American Psychiatric Association, which is very liberal? These include cannabis intoxication, consisting of impaired motor coordination, anxiety, impaired judgment, sensation of slow time, social withdrawal, and often includes perceptual disturbances. Did you know that cannabis intoxication delirium is another illness that is recognized by the DSM? That would be memory deficit disorientation if you smoke pot. There are other conditions that are recognized by the medical establishment caused by marijuana. Cannabis-induced psychotic disorder, delusions, cannabis-induced psychotic disorder hallucinations, and cannabis-induced anxiety disorder. Now let's talk about the effects on the lungs and the airway passages. I don't know if you understand this, but when you burn a leaf, whether it be a leaf of a tree in your backyard or a leaf of marijuana or a tobacco leaf, and you inhale this smoke, you are bringing not only hot smoke into your body, which unto itself is carcinogenic, but there are carcinogenic substances associated with the degradation of marijuana that can induce cancer in long-term use. So you have to understand that pot, in addition to slowing you down and making you less competitive in the world, particularly in the competitive world in which we're living today, marijuana is a very dangerous drug. And the fact is that many of you can smoke it and you think you're doing fine. It's just a joint and a beer and you figure you're fine. Look at the long-term effects, particularly the immunosuppressive effects of marijuana before you assume it's so benign. Annie in San Francisco, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, I just wanted to let you know that I believe everything you're saying is true. And when I heard you give this message over the radio 4 years ago, you prompted me to quit smoking pot.
Well, I'm glad I did, because maybe I helped you in your life in some way. I hope I did.
Oh, you absolutely did. You confirmed all these things. Everything I was going through, being paranoid, having panic attacks, being depressed, everything. When I heard you say this is all because of smoking pot, I was frankly blown away, because I didn't realize that being addicted and abusing it would take me to that point, and I had lost
Right. Many people don't know why they're having anxiety attacks on marijuana. They assume it's because they're getting into their deep inner psyche and they're really a disordered person who suffers anxiety, and then they need something else. So they take marijuana and let's say a Valium together. Then they're on the road to complete and total drug addiction. Let's talk about sexuality in marijuana. Many people smoke marijuana because they think it improves their sex life, and perhaps it does increase the feeling of sexuality. The fact of the matter is drug users, including marijuana users, may become involved in risky sexual behavior as a result of marijuana use. Didn't you find that as well?
Well, no. I'm married, and I didn't involve myself in any risky behavior.
All right. Fine. What about the effect on skills required for safe driving?
Well, forget that. I was a miserable driver when I was stoned.
Right. You know, there is data showing that marijuana can play a role in crashes, particularly when users combine marijuana with alcohol, as they often do, a beer and a joint. The hazards of driving can be more severe than when either drug alone. And by the way, a recent study of patients in a shock trauma unit who had been in traffic accidents revealed that 15% of those, 15% of those who had been driving a car or motorcycle had been smoking marijuana, and another 17% both had THC and alcohol in their blood. So this is a very important problem. Now, I understand why some people are saying we should legalize marijuana, and that is because of the drug wars that are spilling over from Mexico. And I'm very sensitive to that, that if you legalize marijuana, it will take out some of the profit motive for the drug cartels, and as a result, it may slow down their war on the police, particularly in areas such as El Paso and in the southernmost states of the United States of America, which are being overrun in the drug war, being outgunned and outmanned, and it's a real problem. I'm not so sure that that's the answer. I would say maybe militarizing the border would be just as much an answer. I would say putting tanks on the border and stopping the illegals and the drugs could be just as much an answer as legalizing drugs. So I'm not so sure that giving in to the criminal element is the answer to this problem. I heard one man say to me that the answer is to not legalize drugs, but to decriminalize drugs. I'm not quite sure what that is. There's a difference between legalization and decriminalization. I do know that there are too many people in our prisons on drug usage charges, and that goes all the way up the line to crack cocaine and to cocaine itself, even to methamphetamine. I'm not so sure that putting people in prison for using drugs is a solution as much as it is a problem. It is a gigantic problem. And many people who get ensnared in these small drug busts wind up in prison, as we just said. Then they commit a minor infraction in prison by protecting their honor or protecting their backs, and they have to fight in order to survive. Then they're then put into an increased sentence in jail for fighting in jail. Then they're locked into the system for the rest of their lives or for 10 years. And I see it over and over again with these cop shows. And frankly, the more I watch these cop shows, the more I have sympathy for the criminals than I do for the cops. It's not that I'm against the cops. They're doing the job that they're required to do. They're both trapped in a death dance. But to keep arresting people for using drugs, minor use of drugs, not selling drugs, is not the answer as far as I am concerned. But putting the implications of legalization aside, I've tried to focus instead upon the medical dangers of marijuana. And I don't think that they're known very well. The smoke actually contains higher concentrations of carcinogenic polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons. And that's an important phrase than tobacco smoke. I don't want to repeat that. Many of you think that smoking marijuana is not an unhealthy thing to do. You know that cigarettes are unhealthy. We all know that. But marijuana smoke contains higher concentrations of carcinogenic polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons than tobacco smoke. Did you know that marijuana smokers generally inhale more smoke for longer, depositing more than four times as much tar on their lungs as cigarette smokers? You know, marijuana smokers will hold it in. And so the longer you hold the smoke in, you're actually depositing more tar on your lungs than you would with cigarettes. Now, it's worse if you combine marijuana and tobacco. Let's say you're a heavy smoker of marijuana and tobacco joints, more than 10 a day. You're significantly increasing your risk of contracting lung cancer and lung disease. A common side effect usually for first-time or early users of marijuana is anxiety, panic, paranoia, and feelings of impending doom. Now, if you experience any of these reactions and you're a young person whose peers are telling you, come on, don't be a chicken, there must be something wrong with you, I am trying to give you the ammunition you need to walk away from your stupid friends. And if you have any of these feelings, anxiety, panic attacks, paranoia, or you think everyone's after you, or you feel that everything's doomed to come down around you, it's the marijuana. Remember this: anxiety, panic attacks, negative experiences. Scientists have learned a great deal about how THC, the active principle in marijuana, acts in the brain to produce its many effects. You see, when someone smokes marijuana, THC rapidly passes from the lungs right into the bloodstream, which carries the chemical to organs throughout the body, including the brain. I want to make one other quick point right now, and I'm not justifying alcohol usage. I know that alcohol is a very dangerous drug in the hands of people who can't control the amount they take in or control themselves when they use it. Alcohol is a water-soluble drug, which means it is excreted from your body within 24 hours. The active principles in marijuana are fat-soluble components, which means they are not rapidly excreted from your body. They are stored in the fat tissue of your body for many months. Depositing. Try to imagine it this way. Imagine a garbage bag, we're into recycling. Imagine a garbage bag, a big fat black garbage bag that does not break down when thrown into the sea, but floats around for a very long period of time with refuse in it. That's what marijuana byproducts do in your bloodstream. I'll be right back. Savage. Here's an odd fact about marijuana that may explain the radical feminists in America. Do you know that females who use marijuana over time increase their levels of testosterone, which can result in increased facial hair and acne? So pay close attention to Obama's appointees and look for the telltale signs. If you see increased facial hair and acne, you may want to investigate their... I believe that there should be a drug test for every congressman and senator in America. I believe there should be a forced drug test for every public official. You have to take drug tests, don't you, if you work in a corporation? It's required. Why should our leaders not take drug tests? Maybe it might explain some of their behavior. I mean, you know and I know that most of them are whacked out on either prescription drugs like Prozac-related compounds, anti-anxiety drugs. That's why they're so dead. They're like the walking stiffs, this Congress, like the Whigs of ancient England. Just get them the powdered white wigs. They're sleepwalkers. Half the garbage they talk about has no meaning whatsoever. The country is melting down economically. We're being assaulted by Islamofascism around the world. And they're sitting there talking about Obama's inauguration or coronation. That's why I'm talking about this. You see a guy like Obama, one misstep after another. He appoints Panetta to be the head of the CIA and everyone goes ho-hum. Biggest misstep of the man before he even started. New York, WOR, Michael, welcome to the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Michael, my topic is Leon Panetta's appointment. I know why he was picked. Barack Obama asked other people who had intelligence experience to do the job, but he told them two things. He doesn't want foreign taps, and he does not want coerced interrogation. That includes waterboarding, making people feel uncomfortable. And people who were in the intelligence agency that know that this is what works. This is how you catch terrorists. And they know that without these techniques, they can't do the job. And all on top of that, the appointment of Eric Holder, if they make a mistake, they're going to jail. So who in the right mind is going to want to take the job knowing they can't fully do it, and that if there is an attack, they're done? Who wants an attack under their name? And who wants to maybe go to jail if they, waterboard someone?
Right. Well, Eric Holder's a clear and present danger to the entire intelligence community. We know that. And he's going to be the attorney general, a nightmare as the attorney general, another one to be watching out for. So where do you get your surmisal from?
I'm a big talk radio junkie. I listen to everybody. And
right, so you're repeating what you heard on the golfer show, probably.
Actually, Leprechaun. And the thing also too.
All right, wait. So where did the Leprechaun get these conclusions from?
He had a CIA interrogation guy come on this program yesterday.
All right, well, because the Leprechaun himself is not that smart. I mean, Duffy's Tavern would be better served by the Leprechaun, which is why he left talk radio. I don't know if there's any truth to the rumor that he's going to keep his job on TV and put on a white apron during the time he was spending on radio, but he'd be better served behind a bar wiping glasses, because he himself doesn't have too many great insights. The guest sounds like he knows what he's talking about.
Well, that may be true, but I don't think we should dismiss some of the things he say, because
I said the guest had some good insights. In other words, these insights didn't come from the LEP. It came from a guest, and I accept that those may be valid reasons. So how does Panetta intend to get information during interrogation? By telling him jokes?
He can do the job without...
By making them bad calamari dishes? I mean, what's he going to do to get information out of terrorists?
Had intelligence experience, and they all said no, because they know that...
I heard you, but how does Panetta intend to get information from captured terrorists?
Right. You know, if you want, these people aren't going to volunteer information. You have to put pressure on them.
I asked you, how does Panetta intend to get it?
I don't know. I believe he's far left guy, and he believes that in my
opinion. So during any hearings on Panetta's confirmation, wouldn't you expect the Senate to ask him that? Saying since you don't believe in waterboarding and you don't believe in making a terrorist uncomfortable, how do you intend to get information out of a terrorist?
He said that if they're not going to do it, that if Barack Obama says don't do the waterboarding and don't do these foreign taps.
Well, you're not hearing. I don't know if you're hearing me. Maybe there's a problem in the radio, but if we had a senator on the committee, the appointment committee, they have to ask him that, you know. Ann Arbor, Michigan. Jevin, you're on the Savage Nation topic. Please go ahead.
Yes, Michael. Marijuana is definitely a gateway drug from my own personal experience. I tried mushrooms and ecstasy after I was a weed smoker. If I had never smoked
weed. That's right. Weed leads you into the whole drug culture.
I mean, I didn't like those other drugs, but still, I would have never tried it.
Right. Once you're in the marijuana world, it opens you up to the high times propaganda. It opens you up to the whole world of you're cool. Why not go a step further? Oh, you're still smoking pot? You're just a kid. Why don't you try this?
Yeah. Anybody who disagrees, they're idiots, really.
Well, they're drug addicts. And you know why I did a show like this, Jevin? It's interesting. Every time I attack marijuana from the medical point of view, which is irrefutable, I get the defenders of marijuana. And they don't even realize that by defending the drug, what they're doing is evidencing their own addiction.
Yeah, actually, your knowledge of the medical side of it scared me very much because I smoked it for a very long time. I mean, I'm only 30, but, you know, half my life I smoked it.
I admitted that I smoked marijuana when I was young and in college. I smoked it for a number of years. It only impeded my life. It destroyed my critical thinking. It weakened me. It made me a little nervous. It made me anxious. It also, I found, increased my illness level. I would get colds more frequently. My lungs were challenged by the marijuana, and it's all been confirmed by current medical knowledge. And I don't know why people don't understand. This is medically proven information. It's not made up just to scare people.
Yeah.
They don't even understand that they're taking in more tar than when they smoke a cigarette. They think it's good for them because it's natural. That's how idiotic they are, Devin. Natural. What else is natural and can kill you?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Have Obama as president is because we have an entire generation of people who have been seduced by the drug culture. I know that that's an alarmingly shocking, provocative statement, but you have to understand that a good portion of the young people of this nation don't know what's going on around them, not domestically nor internationally. They are brainwashed by the media and by the entertainment industry. And they think, for example, that smoking a joint is harmless and it's better than their parents' martini. The exact opposite happens to be true. Now, I'm not arguing that alcohol is good for you, but there are so many differences between small amounts of alcohol and small amounts of marijuana that it's worth talking about. Whether I will help any of you is really almost irrelevant. But the medical facts can now be found from a site I found on the dangers of marijuana medically, which we linked up on michaelsavage.com. Just use this as a take-home message. Let's put all the social implications aside. When you smoke marijuana, you're probably ingesting four times more tar than you do when you smoke a cigarette. Again, I'm not arguing you should smoke a cigarette, but understand that you're damaging your body. You should also know that marijuana smoke per se, in almost any amount, suppresses the immune system. That's a fact. It's a medical fact. Now, as far as anxiety, as far as paranoia, I think that that varies and is dependent upon the individual, but it's increasing, and that's why so many people are seeking treatment or detoxification for marijuana. Having said that, I will take calls on this subject if you wish. My contention is that marijuana is the most dangerous of all drugs. It should not be legalized because it is a gateway drug. Now, if you want to talk about marijuana horror stories and what it did in your life, maybe you'll save one listener from a terrible road of 20 years, which eventually they're going to come to the same conclusion you did. Did pot lead to heroin? Did pot lead to crack? Did pot lead to mushrooms? Did pot lead to sexual abandonment? Did pot lead to a form of liberalism that was dangerous for you? The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was the age of wisdom. It was the age of foolishness. It was the epic of belief. It was the epic of incredulity. It was the season of light. It was a season of darkness. It was the spring of hope. It was the winter of despair. We had everything before us. We had nothing before us. We're all going direct to heaven. We're all going direct the other way. In short, the period was so far like the present period that some of its noisiest authorities insisted on its being received for good or for evil in the superlative degree of comparison only. We're talking about A Tale of Two Cities by Charles Dickens. When he was writing this book, he wrote this. Of course, he didn't write the book in that period. He wrote about that period in another period, and the period he wrote it in was, of course, a later period. But he's writing about the year 1775, A Tale of Two Cities by Charles Dickens, and he was talking about London and Paris. You may not know it, but London itself was quite lawless at that time, and I want to read you a paragraph about that period of time. In England, there was scarcely an amount of order and protection to justify national boasting. Daring burglaries by armed men and highway robberies took place in the capital itself every night. That sounds like Washington, D.C. today. Families were publicly cautioned not to go out of town without removing their furniture to upholsterers' warehouses for security. The highwayman in the dark was a city tradesman in the light. And being recognized and challenged by his fellow tradesmen, whom he stopped in his character of the captain, gallantly shot him through the head and rode away. The mail was waylaid by seven robbers, and the guard shot three dead, and then got shot dead himself by the other four, after which the mail was robbed in peace. And he goes on and on and on. In other words, it was out of order. And right now our society is out of order, particularly when I opened my last hour by telling you that in San Francisco, which is suffering a drug epidemic, a gang epidemic, a homicide epidemic, a bum epidemic, they're forcing detectives in the San Francisco Police Department to be diversity trained by a transgendered freak show, someone who failed the lieutenant's exam, according to what I am told, but was pushed forward in the dark of night by Annie Twosome Newsom and his cronies, pushed over others who qualified on the exam, and made into a lieutenant. And now this transgendered freak is going to have the pleasure of telling normal detectives how biased they are, how illiberal they are, how mean they are, how cruel they are for not being more sensitive to transgendered individuals. Isn't America great? Isn't San Francisco great that they can devote so much time to such an important topic? It's not much different than the Tale of Two Cities that I was reading about. Now, why am I combining this transgender in the police department story with pot? Because they're intimately related. You don't understand that 30, 40 years of marijuana usage in America, I know it's been used a lot longer than that, but 40 years of incessant usage by politicians has made their brains not only malleable, but weak themselves. Their thinking is altered. And as Blake, the great poet, wrote, "The mind that alters, alters all." They don't understand that their mind has been altered by cannabis and by other drugs, even by Prozac in some cases, and I can't disclose who I'm talking about. But the mind that alters, alters all. So in other words, once your mind is altered, whether it be by Prozac or by marijuana or by alcohol or by other drugs, once the mind is altered, it alters everything it sees and everything it does. And that's how we can wind up in a country like this, where harsh treatment of people who would cut your throat, blow your city up, is considered somehow illiberal. And so the mind-altered liberals say that waterboarding is a horrible thing to do to someone who would blow up your city with a nuclear bomb. They have no solution as to how they would question a hardened terrorist, but they do know that being harsh to the terrorist is somehow bad and un-American. And so then you wind up with a solution of taking a party apparatchik called Panetta, a party hack, a 70-year-old man who was running an unknown university in Monterey, and you say, yes, you run the CIA, even though you don't believe in harsh interrogation techniques, even though you don't believe in putting field operatives out there who can really do their jobs as a spy. We want you to run the biggest spy agency in America. Why? Because we have a government run by marijuana-induced thinking. Whether or not they're smoking marijuana now is not the issue. Their thinking has been altered. The whole society has been altered by pot. I stick to that contention. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It's a very slow news day. There's a war raging in the Middle East. The budget deficit's going to hit $1.2 trillion. They're appointing a peacenik to head up the CIA. And on and on and on. The biggest criminal of the century defies a court order and mails $1 million in jewels to relatives. So I'm talking about marijuana. Now you say, well, why is he talking about marijuana? Well, I believe that many of the problems this country is facing is a result of the meltdown of the mind of the nation. Is it all due to marijuana? Of course not. But it's partly due to the marijuanaization of the United States of America. It has rotted the mind of a generation. It certainly rotted the mind of our leadership, the liberal leaders. You know, by and large, were potheads, and they have picked up much of the mentality of the pot world. Much of their thinking is the addled thinking of marijuana users, such as, well, we can't interrogate would-be terrorists using harsh techniques because that's so un-American. Well, how do you get information to prevent the nuclear bomb from going off? We don't know. We don't know how to do that. San Francisco has a homicide epidemic. San Francisco streets are filled with bums. I can go on and on about the city I love so much. Instead of cracking down on the gangs, the mayor instead promotes a transgendered woman who became a man and now is forcing the other detectives to undergo brainwashing by the transgender detective. It's unbelievable to me. This is all insanity. That's why liberalism, when I say liberalism is a mental disorder, it's related to marijuana usage as well as the usage of other drugs. That's why the country is melting down. Moral decay related to drug usage and related to so many other things. And I put the article up, putting aside all the social commentary that I have just given you. Let's look at the medical evidence of the dangers of marijuana. 4 times as much tar from a marijuana joint as from a cigarette. Depressing the immune system. And on and on and on. Medically sound information. Use it at your own risk. Understand that there is a risk. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. If you want to read that article and give it to a child of yours, go to michaelsavage.com and print it up and give it out to them. That's all. San Antonio, Brent, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, it's an honor, Dr. Savage. I wanted to call you. I'm a first-year psychiatry resident. I actually scrambled into the psychiatry field. I wanted to go into radiology. So I kind of go into it with a skeptical but yet open mind. And I can tell you after treating for a half of a year now that marijuana is definitely a gateway drug into harder drugs like methamphetamine, cocaine, heroin, things like that. But also that it is a mind-warping drug and that when people get on it, they have high suicide rates. They come into the hospital because they're suicidal.
Exactly.
Extreme hallucinations, audiovisual hallucinations. They hear.
Oh, wait, let's pause right now, doctor. You're talking about marijuana now, not LSD, aren't you?
No, LSD, nothing like that. Nothing
right.
Like that.
Marijuana today is so powerful that it's like LSD was 30 years ago.
That is correct. And all the listeners out there that are listening, take notes and tell their kids that marijuana is a very, very dangerous drug. It can cause you to have delusions. We have patients come in that are cutting their wrists, shooting themselves in the head, suicidal, jumping out of cars.
Well, you know the word assassin comes from the Arabic for hashish, because the assassins in those days did and may still to this day take high amounts of hashish before going on suicide missions. I don't think people understand that. this is not a benign drug that makes everyone lie down with the lambs.
No, and on top of that, you have professional chemists now that these drug dealers and producers are hiring to produce top-grade THC, you know, in the marijuana, and then they supplement it with other drugs on top of it. So you buying marijuana from some street corner, you don't even know if you're just getting the THC. You could be getting it laced with something else.
Mm-hmm. Doctor, you know, I want to say thank you very much for calling the show, and I also admire you for going into psychiatry, which is an overly beaten field. It's actually a wonderful field. It's a very important field, and I think a lot of the distaste or distemper towards psychiatry in general is misfounded and is based upon the overuse and the overprescription of drugs, but it's not based upon the fundamental reality that most of Americans are screwed up and can use a good analysis.
Well, I'll tell you just one quick comment, that 95% of Americans who get these psychiatric diagnoses, bipolar, ADHD, most of that stuff is crap. They just can't handle their lives. They need a good kick in the butt. They
right.
need diet.
Exactly,
exercise.
Right. Oh, I'm bipolar. Well, so what? What does that mean? It's just another, you know, I'm a victim. I want someone to help me. What they need is someone to do a drill sergeant on them, Brent. Let me send you a copy of Psychological Nudity. I think you might enjoy it in the few minutes that you have. I want to read you something. The ability to express the unique thought by the unique word is called genius. I'm going to repeat that. And anyone who can tell me who wrote that will win a prize on this show. It's obscure. I don't think anyone's going to get this right, but it's so well stated. I didn't write it, but I believe it. Here it is. The ability to express the unique thought by the unique word is called genius. Anyone know who wrote that? 1-800-449-8255 gets you through to the Savage Nation. Anthony in San Francisco, which topic do you call the show?
Yes, sir. I'm 22 years old. I use cannabis recommended by a doctor with no serious medical condition, and I choose to self-indulge. I believe being a drug addict is not a disease. You know, the rehabilitation programs teach drug addicts that they have a disease. I believe anybody could beat a drug addiction if you truly repent and have faith in God. Most drug addicts.
Well, I can't answer that. I know faith-based recovery programs are very powerful. I know that AA uses faith as part of the treatment. I'm sure it works for people who believe in a higher power than themselves. And whatever works, works. But to substitute one drug for another is not the answer. And I want to remind people that very often, I'm going to go back. Morphine addiction in this country was once, in Europe and America, was once so profound and so advanced that the medical establishment developed a treatment for morphine addiction. And that drug was a modification of the morphine molecule called 3,6-diacetyl morphine. And it was considered a wonder drug, this modified morphine compound, to get people off morphine. 3,6-diacetyl morphine is known as heroin. Many of you don't know that heroin was introduced to get people off morphine. And that's an example of what happens when you use one drug to get, you know, people off another. Do I have to tell you about methadone, the dangers of methadone? I, years ago, knew someone who was addicted to heroin. He's dead now. It was the one kid I knew who we grew up with who was a heroin addict. You would never have known it. He told me that methadone was more addictive than heroin. But he also told me that the thing he couldn't kick at all, ever, until he went for acupuncture, was cigarettes. He told me that nicotine was more addictive than heroin, that he was able to give up heroin and methadone more easily than he could give up nicotine. Isn't that interesting? Until he went to a Chinese acupuncturist. I thought that was fascinating. I don't know the name of the acupuncturist. Or I would put it, it was so long ago, frankly, I don't think I could ever find it anyway. This is the Savage Nation. Should marijuana be legalized? Why is the media trying to destroy Israel? Obama says we will have a $1 trillion deficit. Can we afford it? Are they just going to print money? Are we going to wind up in Weimar, Germany, where you need a wheelbarrow filled with greenbacks to buy a loaf of bread? Let's pray that the potheads in Washington, they may not be active potheads now, but they were active potheads at some time in their life, and they're using marijuana thinking. You don't get yourself out of a deficit by printing money any more than you cure morphine addiction with heroin. And as far as I am concerned, printing money to solve a deficit is the same as using heroin to cure a morphine addiction. We have a very sick government. We have no leadership. We have idiots running the government, as far as I'm concerned. And if you think Obama is any better than the rest of them, I have a used nation to sell you.
Savage.
Driving that train, high on cocaine. Casey Jones, you better watch your speed. Trouble ahead.
As I say, it's a huge, huge quiet news day. There's a war in the Middle East. There's an out-of-control Congress. We have hard times economically, yet Obama has raised $27 million for an inaugural, and the morons in the media are saluting him as though he's being having a coronation. It's unbelievable to me. Muslim fanatics have drawn up a list of Jews to kill, and the Jews continue to say that we need more immigration in London, in England, rather. It's astounding, the world that's going on. So that's why I decided to go to the root of the problem, which is excessive drug use, which has led to excessive liberalism and assorted mental illness related to it. The marijuana dangers that I'm posting on michaelsavage.com is now up on bottom left. It's from marijuanadetox.com. You should read it, and don't argue with me. Now, I put out a challenge earlier in the show, which was a quote. The ability to express the unique thought by the unique word is called genius. And I said anyone who can tell me where that came from will win a prize. I must tell you that I don't know where it came from, so I don't know how to give out the prize, but I'm going to let those callers think they know where it came from. Challenge me. Brad in Sacramento, welcome to the Savage Nation. Who wrote the ability to express the unique thought by the unique word is called genius?
Hey, Dr. Savage, I think it was Rudyard Kipling, and I think I learned that from a wise man named Dr. Savage right here on this very program.
I'm sorry that's not the answer, but thank you for trying. It was not Rudyard Kipling. We'll take one more. Do we have anyone else who thinks they know the answer to that? Here it is, San Francisco, KNEW. Jeff, who made that quote?
Yeah, hi, Michael. The answer is Bernard Baruch. Is that correct?
I don't know if it's correct. Let me explain why I can't answer the question. I was watching a movie last night. I wasn't in the mood for anything but a film noir, and luckily I caught one called The Quiet American, from 1959, starring Audie Murphy, who really was a fine actor, by the way, war hero and fine actor. The Quiet American, written by Graham Greene, set in Saigon in 1959. It was quoted in there from one of the Graham Greene characters. I think Ronald Coleman played the Englishman. He said that. He said, oh, you know, the ability to express the unique thought by the unique word is called genius. Now, I don't know, maybe Graham Greene wrote it.
Now, the quote is actually a little different from when I'm reading it here online. It states, the ability to express an idea is well nigh as important as the idea itself. Which is, isn't that pretty much the same thing?
Now, where did you find this? Is there a website that has quotes on it? That's an interesting site you're on. What site is that, Jeff?
It's called BrainyQuote.com. And then just look up under Bernard Baruch. And he was a famous American statesman. He was an economic advisor to Woodrow Wilson.
Oh, no. I know who Bernard Baruch is, but it's not exactly the same quote. But I'm going to give you a consolation prize anyway, because you got really close to the guy who quoted. I'm sending you a package of lens cleaning paper that I used this morning. I'm joking. I'll send you a copy of Psychological Nudity, Jeff. Thanks for trying. Maybe someone could go on and find it, The Quiet American by Audie Murphy, written by Graham Greene. You know, I want to go back to something else. So I'm watching the movie last night, The Quiet American by Graham Greene. Black and white, unbelievable photography. You know, the reason I love it is the photography was better than today. Today they shoot in video stock, and it's very colorful for the kids who go to the movies, mainly the kids on drugs who sit there, and every 2 minutes someone has to be killed or a car has to come exploding, you know, off the screen, or some idiot on steroids has to be thrown through a window in order to keep their attention span going. These movies were built on dialogue, almost entirely dialogue, almost very little action. And not only great dialogue in the film noir era, but also the camera angles, the cinematography, if you watch it. So the dialogue was, the screenplay was by Graham Greene, as I say. It brought me back to my college education. When I went to Queens College in New York in the 1950s, I guess it was the late 50s, very late 50s, I entered college. I was 16 years old. The education was pretty great. And we read Graham Greene. He was a playwright. But what we read was Our Man in Havana. I think he wrote that. In fact, our English lit professor took us to Manhattan to see the performance called Our Man in Havana. And, you know, a lot of it was above me. I didn't understand a lot of the dialogue, but I understood how good it was and tried to reach for it. That's what I'm getting at. In other words, we were exposed to people smarter than ourselves, more educated than ourselves, and we tried to reach to understand them and to emulate them. Now, compare it to today in the world of education today, where the potheads have taken over the educational establishment, where anyone who is smarter than the student is looked upon somewhat suspect, as somewhat elitist. And they let the child lead the classroom. They let the inner-city child lead the teacher. They let the immigrant who doesn't speak English lead the educational process. And that is why we are living in the world we live in, which is a debased world, a degenerate world, because everything is upside down in the world where marijuana has penetrated the mindset. Do you understand why I'm talking about marijuana? The marijuana mind has degenerated the entire country. I stand by those words. And just as the Boxer Rebellion in China saved China from domination by foreign powers, namely the English, it took a rebellion by the martial artists of their time to kick the British out of China. We ourselves need a rebellion in this country to kick the controllers out of this Congress. They are destroying us. They have destroyed virtually every aspect of our lives. It gets crazier by the day. Let me give you another story that I didn't get to yet. Porn kings want a bailout. Now, of course, they're being facetious. But are they being facetious? And will they be taken seriously by Obama? Larry Flint and another pornographer claim that the economy has made America's sexual appetite go limp. So they're going to one place where sex is always rampant, Congress, according to TMZ. Flint, the hustler guy, and another one are asking the government for a $5 billion bailout, claiming the adult entertainment industry has taken a huge shot to the face because of the downturn, citing the fact that XXX DVD sales are down 22% from a year ago. And so they're going to Congress to rejuvenate the sex industry. And they say that Congress seems willing to help shore up our nation's most important businesses. We feel we deserve the same consideration. Now, of course, maybe it's a PR move. But on the other hand, I wouldn't be surprised that if they spend enough money with our wonderful, esteemed congressman, they might just get another bailout for the porn industry. Tampa, Florida. Chris, you're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, you're a gentleman and a scholar, and you got a great sense of humor. I hope you keep it. I wanted to talk to the legalization of marijuana. I spent 10 years smoking and living in a Scandinavian legalized soft drug society. And you speak the truth about what you say. I hope people listen. And the legalization...
Well, look at Scandinavia, a once proud, vigorous area of the world, filled with descendants of Vikings. Tell us what it's become today. Overrun by Islamofascists. The girls, as you well know, are licentious. The men are unable to protect their own nation. The grandmothers are afraid to go out in the streets. Crime is rampant. You know that, and I know that.
Absolutely, and there's no ability to change your place in society. You're grooved into it. And one of the things they do by their legalization, once you use the drugs, you become stamped as a drug user, and that's where you'll stay. I will say this. There are a lot of young people who see that. All the things you speak about is that happens to somebody. I smoked hashish myself for about 7 or 8 years, and your show gave me some facts that made me quit about a decade ago. So I appreciate that.
Wow, 10 years ago. What? And mostly it wasn't the social commentary. You probably heard me alert you to the medical dangers of marijuana, the immunosuppressant effects, the effects of tar on the lungs. Isn't that what you're talking about?
Absolutely.
In other words, let's put aside the hyperbole about social effects for the moment. Many of you think that I'm making these things up, and you may disagree with me. But the actual biomedical effects of marijuana smoke on the body, or what I'm talking about, they're deadly.
Yeah, it's mostly it impedes your mind. It stops you from taking a path that is better, more joyous, more happy, more direct, more real. And it can affect an entire society. You see,
but Chris, it's amazing to me that you heard me do this 10 years ago and it changed your thinking and you did some research and you gave up. It wasn't easy, is it? Because quitting marijuana is very hard.
No, it's not easy. About 7-8 years ago, 2001, I guess, when I started thinking about it. But you grow a little older, you realize it didn't. It is a gateway to harder drugs for some people. It wasn't for me.
Yeah, but withdrawal is very difficult with marijuana. Withdrawal is very, very powerful.
That
I read somewhere that the number of years you smoked it is the number of years it's going to take you to stop the craving?
I didn't feel a physical craving. I mostly mental, and it didn't seem that long. And I would say that it doesn't take that long once you make your mind up. It's mostly in your mind.
Well, because you're a strong-willed person. I know somebody who gave up alcohol in the same white-knuckle way. This person just said, that's enough, it's a poison. Every time I see a bottle of wine, to me it has a skull and crossbones on it, and this person will never touch alcohol again. That's without any treatment whatsoever. I mean, there are people who are that strong.
I wanted to make one more comment to you. You know, they think that the decriminalization and the legalization will... Well, I'll tell you what happens in Europe. The criminals are still running the drugs. It's legal. You can smoke pot. You can go to areas. You can buy it on the street in certain places. And the criminals are still the people who are controlling the drug market. And
well, it's the same in America. These pot clinics are still run by drug cartels. They make believe that they're saving the AIDS patient and the cancer patient. And they have marijuana stores in Oakland and San Francisco. Who do you think's running them?
Oh, I think same trash. But listen, Dr. Savage, it's a pleasure. I really appreciate your great historic relevance about what happened in the 30s and the 40s in Europe and so forth.
No, yeah. Well, unfortunately, I think history is repeating itself, and I think that Obama is not the solution. I think he's the problem. Thanks for the call. Can you say he's different. You say he's different than the rest of them. I would hope he is. How do you explain a coronation that's going to cost $37 million? If this man was really different, if this man really believed that he has to solve the nation's economic problems by belt tightening, why would he have a coronation that costs $37 million? Because he's no different. That's why. They're all the same. Anyone who gets to the top of the political class is identical to the one that preceded him. That's all. This is the Savage Nation. If you want to read all about it, go to michaelsavage.com. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Have a vulture in Manhattan who allegedly ripped people off for $50 billion, smirking every time he comes out of a courtroom, and he apparently owns the judge. I've been asked for an investigation of the judge to no avail. You know, we're living in the equivalent of ancient Rome where you can buy a judge, not all judges, obviously, but enough of them to make the law itself easy to be mocked. And, you know, there are people who are committing suicide because of their losses. German billionaire committed suicide by, they say, driving onto a train track. Here's another story just came out this morning. Real estate executive found dead in apparent suicide. Chicago real estate executive Stephen L. Good was found dead of an apparently self-inflicted gunshot wound in his Jaguar in a forest preserve outside Chicago. Mr. Good, age 52, was chief executive of Sheldon Good & Company, one of the nation's largest real estate auction firms. His father founded the company in 1965. Now, I don't know whether his company's in trouble or not, but we do know that there are people who have lost everything because of the downturn in the economy. And unfortunately, they don't know how to cope without their wealth and without their prestige and without their power. Apparently, they have to kill themselves because there is no self outside the power and the money. You can say it's sad. What good is it going to say it's sad? What does sadness have to do with it? You can't make such generalizations. You know, you don't know how you would act if you lost everything. Only when you've been up and down and over around and a pirate, a poet, a puppet, and a prawn can you understand what I'm talking about. I am lucky because I've been a puppet, a pirate, a poet, a prawn, not a pawn. I've never been a pawn, but I've been a prawn. And it goes very good with puttanesca sauce, I got to tell you that. There's another story that I found this morning that I put up on michaelsavage.com. It's intriguing. Austria's Woman on Wall Street and Madoff. It's a fascinating story. Here's a woman with her red wig named Sonja Cohn who gathered billions of dollars for Bernard Madoff. That's right. Sonja Cohn ran Bank Medici in Austria, and she's now in hiding. Why is she in hiding? Well, she gathered billions of dollars from Madoff from wealthy investors in Russia and across Europe. She founded a firm called Bank Medici. Now they don't know where she is. They say that another theory about her disappearance is that she may be afraid of some particularly displeased investors. Russian oligarchs, whose money made up a chunk of the $2.1 billion that Bank Medici invested with Bernie Madoff. With Russian oligarchs as clients, said a Viennese banker who knew Mrs. Cohen and her husband socially, she might have reason to be afraid. So there's a woman now who apparently is on the lam because she lost money for those who don't take losses very lightly, to say the least. With her husband Irwin, a former banker, you see, Mrs. Cohn was able to draw interest from wealthy Russians, Ukrainians, and Israelis. And Mrs. Cohn and her husband even managed to secure meetings with deep-pocketed Arab investors. Chris J. Hoekster, not Huckster, Chris J. Hoekster, a veteran New York-based communications advisor. What the heck is a communications advisor? I got to look into that. Who worked with Bank Austria and met Mrs. Cohn frequently in Manhattan, said the following. She said, she has a very aggressive personality and wouldn't take no for an answer. She was overwhelming. Mrs. Cohn owns 75% of Bank Medici, with Bank Austria holding the rest. And it's an interesting story from the New York Times. And I believe that you have to read the whole story to understand exactly why Mrs. Cohen is on the lam. She gathered billions for Bernie Madoff, and it's all gone. And some of the people that she gathered from are not like the guys from Boca Raton. Let me put it to you that way. Unlike the guys from Boca Raton who are going to their psychiatrist, I think the oligarchs in Russia are going to someone else to try to get restitution. The big lie at the center of this big spending stimulus is a big story. Budget deficit to hit $1.2 trillion. You know, I don't understand. Obama says it's going to be $1.2 trillion, yet no one's talking about cutting. They can't cut. They can't tighten Medicare. They can't tighten Social Security. They can't tighten this. They can't tighten that. They can't cut 20% of every governmental agency. They don't know how to cut. All they do is tell you they're going to print more money. Well, if they print more money, does that mean that the dollar is worth more or less? Well, it means the dollar will be worth less. And so, therefore, our good friends in China are saying, well, you know what? I don't think we want to take on any more of your debt because your dollars are becoming less and less valuable. This is the Savage Nation. These are, of course, the opinions of only one man, me, myself, and I, the Savage Nation. We've been talking today about marijuana dangers. We've been talking about survival of America, survival of the mind, survival of the psyche, survival of the lungs, survival of the body. We're talking about the big lie here, the big lie there a lie, there a lie, everywhere a lie. The most important story is the one no one called about in San Francisco. That's because the cops are afraid. It's an exclusive to the Savage Nation, leaked to me by an anonymous source. I have the memorandum within the San Francisco Police Department showing that detectives are being forced to undergo brainwashing by a transgendered freak who was made a lieutenant, even though she scored lower than 49 other people on the list. Because they're moving the transgendered freak to the top of the list as a detective, they're forcing the non-transgender detectives to undergo transgendered brainwashing. This is why we have a homicide epidemic, a gang epidemic, a bum epidemic, a filthy street epidemic in San Francisco, the city I love most dearly. I do. I love it very dearly. In fact, last night after the show, I walked the streets of the city all bundled up. I love the city. I love looking at the architecture. I love looking at the people. I didn't love the bums. I must tell you, I didn't enjoy the bums. I'm getting increasingly offended by them. I don't like them asking me for money. I'm starting to hate them. You know, in the past, I could ignore them. I'm starting to absolutely hate them. I don't like the aggressiveness of the bums in the city. And although Eddie Toussaint Newsome came to power in part by saying he would clean up the bum problem, if anything, it's only gotten worse. But of course, that qualifies him to be governor of the state of California. Who knows, if he keeps ruining things along the way, he might even be president one day. Look how far Obama got by doing nothing. This is the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere. As a matter of fact, be here or be on MichaelSavage.com. That's what I say. Be here or be on MichaelSavage.com Frankly, there's very little else out there that you can hold on to.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Here are some of the things I've been talking about today on the Savage Nation. Should marijuana be legalized? Why is the media trying to destroy Israel? Obama says we're going to have a $1 trillion deficit. Let's start with the marijuana issue. George Soros and liberal politicians, emboldened by what they perceive as a more permissive Obama era, are trying to legalize pot. Are they right, or are they putting the lives of America's children at risk with this, the most dangerous of entry-level drugs? Remember, this is not the marijuana your hippie parents smoked. Today's pot is many times more dangerous and toxic than it was 30 or 40 years ago. Why is the media trying to destroy Israel? I'll give you three simple answers. In addition to giving the enemies of Israel unlimited time on national and international television, the media, particularly Fixed News, is now raging against Israel for not allowing their reporters into Gaza. Should Israel need to let the media in? Shepard Smith, the worst of the fanatics of the supposedly conservative Fixed News Network, actually attacked Israel because they didn't let their reporters in.
There are many questions about it, whether it's fair for us as journalists to be showing what has clearly been only one side of a story.
From our perspective as a government, you're doing a very difficult combat situation. What has to be our first priority? I mean, really, our first priority has to be the safety of our troops, and the mission, that the mission is done safely and completely. And we learned in Lebanon that having a lot of journalists around can sometimes hurt the mission. That's why we're doing the embeds. That's why we're helping where we can. But the whole argument that we could just have everything open, right, like on a normal day, like it was some sort of picnic,
like it was in 2006.
That is not a rational argument.
Is this makeup face just as much a liberal as CNN's far left, Mata Hari Christiane Amanpour? I think they may share the same makeup, man. We are now in day 12 of the fighting in the Gaza Strip, and I've been asking myself where this is heading. Will Hamas be so crippled that they won't be able to threaten Israel any longer? Will Israel back off before achieving their objectives, leaving Hamas stronger? I know most of my listeners are pondering these questions, but also asking themselves what led up to this. To help answer that question, I'd like to bring on Dr. James Carafano, a leading expert in defense at the Heritage Foundation. Dr. Carafano, how do we get where we are with Israel and the Palestinians?
Okay, so here's the deal. Why are we where we are? And it all starts with Hamas and Israel. So Hamas wins an election, fine, great, and then they go in and they physically seize control of Gaza. They murder all their opponents and they kind of take over, and they got their own little country now. And the first thing they start to do is try to pretend they're Hezbollah, which is the terrorist group that's in Lebanon, and they start smuggling in rockets. Longer, you know, they've got the Qassam, which is their own homemade rocket, but they start smuggling longer rockets. So the point now, they've got an arsenal that can reach about 12% of the Iraqi population. That's over 800,000 people. Okay, and then they just start lobbing these things at Israel. So theoretically, there's this truce that started in June of 2008, which they violated all the way to the wrong. And so Israel's looking here and they're saying, okay, basically what I have here is another Hezbollah. I've got a military with an armada of missiles and rockets, and they're shooting at my people every day. And the only way to deal with this is to go in and basically clean them out. So you have to ask, how did we get to that point? You know, and part of the tragedy is here, this was preventable. You know, why are they shooting rockets and mortars? Because the Israelis got really good at stopping people with car bombs and suicide vests, right? So they just went on to the next weapon, right? And so the weapon is the one thing the Israelis can't defend against now is somebody lobbing a missile over the demarcation line. This is very similar to what the United States had in the Cold War. If you remember, us and the Soviets, they had nukes, we had nukes, and, we really couldn't do anything about it. The Soviets invade Afghanistan. We just kind of wave hello. The Soviets send supplies in Africa and Latin America. We just kind of, wave at them. And then Reagan comes along and says, why don't we just defend ourselves? The same thing, today we have a thing we could shoot down a ballistic missile fire from North Korea. Well, we could also shoot down short-range missiles, just the ones that just go a couple of kilometers, like the ones that Hamas are using, mortars, rockets. And we've got the technology to do this. It's a laser. There's two kinds, kind of tactical. One's called chemical, which is a big kind of clunky thing. Smaller ones, it's a solid-state laser. It's not as powerful, but solid-state lasers are much more movable. And the way they work is instantaneously, because they work at the speed of light, they see the rocket, the mortar shell, they burn a hole in it, and it just blows up. And the United States and Israel have been working on these for years, and they haven't deployed them because, our military being what it is, the perfect is the enemy of the good. And we just saying, well, it's not mobile enough, it's not powerful enough and everything. But, it's good enough to deal with threats like this. So if the United States and Israel had built these laser defenses, which are perfectly feasible, they're not science fiction, they wouldn't have had, in a sense, to invade. They could have just shot everything out of the sky that Hamas threw at them. And then, maybe we wouldn't have had the only solution is having a war. So that's kind of where we are, what we are. And, Hamas is going to rebuild. And, unless they kill every guy in Gaza, eventually, or stay forever, Hamas is going to get more rockets, they're going to get more mortars, and they're going to try this again. So if we did, like we've done with missile defense, build missile defenses, that devalues the enemy's arsenal, right? It marginalizes them. And then, perhaps there's an opportunity for, serious peace talks with, people other than Hamas, because they're just a terrorist organization. They're never going to deal with you. But if you can marginalize then, maybe other people come up and actually be good partners for peace. I think it's actually a good news story here. Hamas are bad people. They've done some terrible things. They're not a good partner for peace. The military operation has, taken them down a lot, and that's a good thing. But, the tragedy is that there are a lot of civilian casualties as a result of that, a lot of because of the way Hamas fights, by actually trying to force Israel to have civilian casualties. Why are we playing their game, letting them either just shoot at Israel or forcing, civilian casualties on the front page of the world headlines? Why don't we have a game changer? And something like this, it's not a solution to Middle East peace. It's not going to solve every problem, but it could allow Israel to defend itself, and that would be, putting them ahead of the game. Just like we should be building missile defenses so nobody could ever threaten us with a ballistic missile. We should be able to shoot it out of the sky if it's fired by North Korea or Iran or anybody else. We need to get serious about our defending ourselves and quit thinking about the whole – Cold War thing where we're safer if we can kill each other. So, Michael, I don't know what you think, but I think being able to protect yourself, act from a position of strength, that would be a lot smarter way of doing business.
Dr. Carafano, I couldn't agree more. Thank you for joining me and my listeners on the Savage Nation. Savage.
Peter Ortzag now forecasts that at the current course and speed, a $1 trillion deficit will be here before we even start the next budget. That we're already looking at a $1 trillion budget deficit, or close to a $1 trillion budget deficit, and that potentially we've got $1 trillion deficits for years to come.
Obama says we'll have a $1 trillion deficit. No kidding. Where are the Democrats who a year ago were talking about the high cost of the war in Iraq? Well, I guess they like the high cost of the war in Iraq, and they're going to add the high cost of war in Afghanistan. Obama says there won't be any earmarks in his stimulus package. Do you believe him? I don't. They just won't call them earmarks. They'll call them toe marks. Will just as many Republicans as Democrats fall for Obama's socialism? You betcha. It's a new year for the Savage Nation as America slowly begins to awaken from its drunken, overfed stupor, as America rises up from the napping and the nogging, as we drive back from the houses of relatives, anxious to get back to familiar routines, we still face the same frightening world we faced in 2008, dangerous, deadly, and corrupt. How many new Bombay terror attacks wait for us in this new year? How many new Bernie Madoffs are lurking for us in the shadows? How many new Hank Paulsons hover in the offing waiting to destroy our economy, willing to turn a few tricks for their friends on Wall Street? The Republican Party is in disarray because it was purged of real conservatives. The Democrats are in power, ready, willing, and able to throw our country into disarray with their socialism once their anointed one, Barack Obama, takes office. And where does that leave the American people? In limbo, looking for a leader that hasn't yet arrived. We've been talking about the mammoth financial fraud that is eating away at the foundation of our nation. Bernard Madoff seems to have gotten away with the financial crime of the century, but now his victims want their money back and are now demanding that the government bail them out. Does that sound like the American way to you? Not to me. Why don't you bail out people at the racetrack in Las Vegas? Financial expert Wayne Allen Root doesn't think so. He's here to report on what these Madoff victims want. Wayne, over to you.
Thank you, Michael. Hey, the Bernard Madoff scandal is a terrible situation. It's an awful situation. My heart goes out to the people that were duped, many of whom lost their life savings or at least a large portion of it. But the investors now want special treatment. They want government to save them. They think that government is responsible. Hey, what's new here, Michael? Our whole society is looking to government to save them. That's the problem with our country. We've become a bunch of wussies and weenies, pathetic souls looking for government to save us. Everyone's a victim looking for someone to blame. I call it the bailout mentality. We used to make fun of welfare moms in Detroit with five kids, or illegal immigrants with six kids in school getting free lunches. Now everyone wants a free lunch. Wall Street wants a free lunch. AIG wants it. Banks want it. American Express wants it. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac want it. GM, Ford, and Chrysler want it. Look at Obama's tax cut. We're giving tax cuts to people who didn't make any money and didn't pay any taxes in the first place. Goldman Sachs and American Express, they're victims. They declare themselves a bank, and then they can go to the Fed window and collect billions of dollars. How's that for a bailout? How's that for being connected to special people in special places? Hey, that gives me an idea. Why don't we have the people that lost in the Madoff scandal designate themselves as a bank? And then the Fed can just open the window and hand them trillions of dollars. Why not? Hey, listen, Michael, these people that lost with Madoff, they're big boys and they're big girls. Suck it up and take responsibility. You didn't do your fiduciary responsibility. Government's not responsible. You know what the definition of capitalism is? Sometimes things go up. Sometimes things go down. Some businesses fail, some succeed. Some stocks go way up, some crash to the bottom. Same thing with bonds, same thing with real estate. The reason there's big reward is that you're taking big risk, and everybody knew that walking in. Now they act like a victim and claim they didn't know anything. Years ago, I owned Tyco, and I owned WorldCom stock, and they both went to zero, and no one bailed me out. Funny thing, though? I didn't ask for any help. I didn't want a bailout. Now everybody wants a bailout. Cities, states, individuals, corporate CEOs have become a bunch of welfare queens. We've become a victim society, and we all go to the same place. We think the Fed will save us. Hey, start the printing machines and just print up some more money. But you know what? The bill's gonna come due, Michael. There's no free lunches. There's gonna be massive inflation, massive deficit, massive debt, and eventually massive taxes to pay for it all. Everyone wants government to rescue them, but no one wants to pay the price. You know who's going to pay the price? Our children and grandchildren, who are going to be buried in debt and interest from all these people that took all these bailouts and all these stimulus packages. You know, Bernard Madoff's scam proves one thing and one thing only: the futility and the folly of depending on government. Government's a failure. Why don't you ask the people of New Orleans? They are still waiting with their mouths open and their hands wide like little birds waiting for their mother to feed them. Why don't you ask the returning soldiers from Iraq and Afghanistan who showed up at Walter Reed Hospital, and you know what they got from government? Mold in their hospital room. Why don't you ask the people that benefited from the Great Society? Ask them how great it really was when all these years later, they still don't have a job. They're still living in poverty. Did the SEC save Madoff's investors? Of course not. Government's made up of bureaucrats that couldn't get a job in the private sector. The bailouts and the Madoff scandal and the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac scandal with good old Congressman Barney Frank overseeing the mortgage mess while his boyfriend ran the show. They all prove the folly and the futility of looking to government for anything. You know what? I guess I'm the last frontier. I'm a small businessman. I'm an SOB, a son of a butcher. I'm a gunslinger. I don't want Obama's help. I don't want the SEC's help. I don't want the Fed's help. I expect nothing from no one. I believe it is, if it is to be, it is up to me. Personal responsibility, self-reliance, frontier spirit, that's my credo. All I want is freedom and lower taxes. I want to keep more of my own money, and I want to get government out of the way. I don't want special treatment, and I don't want any bailouts. This has been Wayne Allen Root, libertarian, author of the new book, The Conscience of a Libertarian, Empowering the Citizen Revolution with God, Guns, Gambling, School Choice, and Tax Cuts. Back to you, Michael Savage.
An interesting perspective, Wayne. The more we find out about the Madoff case, the fewer innocent people we seem to find. Today before the show, I'm sitting outdoors eating in a little takeout joint, and school had just gotten out. Well, they got out for early. That's why I was wondering why the kids got out. And there's these boys, 12 years old, going by on bicycles. And I see they're having fun. I guess one of them wasn't on Ritalin, and he was doing pop willies with his bike. And he was racing at the other boys and then coming to a screeching halt and trying to hit them with the bike, and they were jumping. And I saw an adult woman go by, turning around as if to say something to him. But I gave her the eagle eye from my chair as if to say, if you say one word, you're going to get a dressing down from me. Leave them alone. So she smiled at them and walked on. I know what she was going to do. She was going to try to give her two liberal cents to the boys, who were actually, one of them was a boy. The others were nice little kids. They wouldn't harm a fly. But I overheard their conversation, and there were four of them. And I don't know which one was lecturing them. I didn't know his ethnicity. I think they were all white boys, but I'm not sure. And one of them turns to him and says to him, so you mean everything that I said, everything that's said now is racist? And the kid who was lecturing says, yes. I said, oh, my God. They're little women. The boys have become little women here in Liberal County. The boys have been brainwashed. They've been caponized. They've been homogenized. They've been sanitized. They've been pasteurized. It's all of this mentality. What kind of nation can survive when we have such vultures circling this great nation, I ask myself, as I went on to eat my fish and rice in peace and harmony. You know what I'm saying? Or don't you know what I'm saying?
Savage.
Nazi Germany of the 1930s had its Kristallnacht. The liberal fascist Britain of today have something else. The Islamo-fascists in England have drawn up a list of the nation's leading Jews that they want to be killed. Remember, in the 1930s, brown shirts roamed the streets of Nazi Germany, and now dirty nightshirts roam the streets of England's cities. These hardened mass murderers are targeting Jews in government, Jews in the media, and prominent Jews in the legal profession. Interestingly enough, it was the prominent liberal Jews who initiated the asylum policies to let these radical Muslims in. Jews in the media and prominent Jews in the legal profession. Prominent politician Lord Levy is on the list. Foreign Secretary David Miliband is on the list. Record producer Mark Ronson is on the list. You know what goes around comes around. Liberals awaken. And this isn't just talk. Numerous anti-Jewish incidents have occurred in England since the beginning of the year. A firebombing has been perpetrated in a London synagogue. Synagogues in Sweden have been attacked. Synagogues in France have been attacked. The tide of Islamo-fascist hatred around the world is rising. And yet, what are we doing here in America? We're letting more Muslims into America, particularly throwbacks from the 15th century. And what is the British government doing about it? The British government is, in the words of one official, reviewing security. Such a passive response is practically the act of a government which is complicit in these acts of hatred. It is not enough to review security. It is necessary that these murderers and murderers in waiting be tracked down, tried, and punished mercilessly for their crimes. Israel, for once, is standing up for itself and leading by example. They have stood up against the murderers that would kill them for 70 years, but the West so far has not followed their lead. Remember Neville Chamberlain, the weak-kneed, appeasing British Prime Minister of the 1930s who refused to stand up to Hitler? He seems to be the model for the British government today. England is filled with a new generation of Chamberlains who aid and abet another generation of fascist murderers who are living on England's shores. In truth, there is no England anymore, and if the rest of Europe and the United States waits much longer, there'll be no Western civilization anymore. Liberals, awaken. We've been talking about the mammoth financial fraud that is eating away at the foundation of our nation. We've been talking about the situation in Gaza today. I've been discussing liberalism and marijuana today. You've heard me talk till I'm blue in the face about the dangers of Chinese imports, not just the high percentage of recalls due to health concerns, but the loss of U.S. jobs. It's killing our country. We've seen a rise in tainted foods, as well as a major loss of quality in products themselves, all in the name of profit at the expense of our very lives, our very society itself. Joining us today is Dr. Robin McPhee, a physician, as well as a medical toxicologist who's written an article for Family Security Matters titled Made in China, which says maybe it's time for this label to leave America. Dr. McPhee, welcome to the Savage Nation.
I'm a real fan, so it's a real privilege to participate, so thanks a lot.
Give us the background on your article.
As a medical toxicologist, as a physician who specializes in poisons and safety issues, the whole China issue is a disaster. When you consider the fact that this country has made a set of industries and an economic policy of underpricing products to get into markets, well, the only way you can constantly underprice something is to cut corners. So as a physician, when I look at the range of products that we've been called upon to either treat or provide guidance or information to the public, I mean, you're talking about, you know, toys with high contents of lead in the paint. You're talking about, you know, toys and clothes that are either fire risks or they fall apart and provide a choking hazard. Or you look at food products that have been tainted with salmonella, like the vitamin C ingredients or the vitamin A. Or you look at the mojito rimmers or some of the other products, whether they're food or food ingredients coming out of China. Or you're looking at they've been tainted with fungus or they've been provided tons of antibiotics and antifungal medications because if they've been farm-raised, they're farm-raised in polluted waters. Or let's look at some of the other products like fish that were mislabeled. Instead of being monkfish, they were pufferfish, and they had tetrodotoxin. So when you look at the broad range of products that come out of China and other countries, but China's the leading country in terms of product recalls into the United States, you look at the range of these products and the risks to health that Americans face, it doesn't paint a very good picture for China, and it really doesn't paint a very good picture for the U.S. companies that do business with them.
Well, you say a lot of the problem is our own fault.
As a security professional who's co-authored a couple books on toxicoterrorism, you look at the policies that China has instituted, whether it's trying to corner the market on certain industries, whether it's trying to aid other countries that aren't friendly with us. And then you look at us. I mean, we've met the enemy, and he is us. You know, our trade policies are ludicrous. We have allowed the Chinese to enjoy a trade imbalance that borders on the criminal. We have the Chinese that own about 30% of our United States currencies, our securities. I mean, when you think about it, every time Congress writes a check, China's cashing about 30 cents of it. That's crazy. So from a security perspective, we've allowed China and to a lesser degree Russia to own a big part of our securities. We have allowed them to put enormous numbers of our businesses out of business. Our economy is wavering in large measure because we don't manufacture anything. And why do we not manufacture anything? Well, because we've outsourced to China. Why not? I hold a couple medical device patents. And the technology will save lives, there's no question. But let me give you an example of why that's relevant. So the investors would throw tons of money. They said that, we'll throw tons of money at you, Robin, if you build it in China. I looked at them and I said, are you kidding? And they said, well, Robin, you can't build it for less than $8 a unit in the United States, and you can build it for 40 cents a unit in China. We'll all get rich. Just sign the dotted line. I'm thinking, let's see. Chinese-made heparin has killed 100-plus people. And I just went down the list of all the products that the Chinese can't seem to build safely, and I thought, that's probably immoral for a physician to outsource a medical technology for 40 cents on the dollar when, you know, I can make it for $8 in the U.S. and help the American worker. But that's the calculus. Dr. Savage, you and I both know that is the calculus that our American industries are looking at. As a result, American manufacturing represents 10% of the entire employment base. That is antediluvian. That is Civil War levels. And it is exactly a national and domestic security threat.
Give us some examples of the recent recalls on products made in China.
Let's see. How about toy army figures? There are about 6,000 of those that have lead paint, high levels of lead paint. Then, of course, there's the hat and mitten sets, which are choking hazards. Maybe some toy TVs from China. There are a couple thousand of those with high lead levels. If your kid's musically inclined, try the toy xylophones. Oh, no, you can't because they're made in China and they've got high lead paint levels. Halloween figures, how about 15,000 of them, lead paint? I mean, this is just in the last month and a half. So I've just rattled off several hundred thousand worth of products imported from China. This is unacceptable.
Well, don't forget the baby formula.
Oh, happy Thanksgiving. Yes, around Thanksgiving, the FDA, of course, they originally misnamed which companies were involved, which, of course, didn't help the shareholder price of either company. But, yes, Enfamil and some of Nestle's products had melamine and cyanuric acids in them. Now, each one is considered low toxicity, but if you intermix them, you run the real risk of some kidney damage. Fortunately, these were identified. Unfortunately, these have been known for a couple months. You know, any milk products that have emanated out of China or any of the ingredients that emanated out of China and got into either the Cadbury chocolate, which of course was made with some of the Chinese milk products, the powdered milk products, or the baby formulas, or some of the other candies, or the coffee creamers, or the coffee with milk. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. In China, over 50,000 children had some form of kidney involvement, and there were numerous deaths and numerous hospitalizations. So my concern isn't just for American kids. It's for kids anywhere that could be exposed to China's, I would say, morally bankrupt policies, manufacturing policies. They have very poor safety regulations. Why did it take 50,000 kids getting sick before the world got upset about it, before the FDA got upset about it, before China got upset about it? You know, in the United States, to our credit, you know, one kid gets sick from a product, it makes the front page. In China, how many thousand have to get sick before someone notices? This is just absolutely ludicrous, but this is how they do business.
How do they get away with these products that are so dangerous to our health?
Even though they are aware of the health threats that their products pose to us, nevertheless, they do a very smart game of, let's do a little window dressing, let's clean it up a little bit, let's hold a couple guys out for public pillaring, let's tell the world we cleaned our act. That's what they did after the toy problem of 2007. And for the first couple of months, you didn't hear anything about lead paint or tainted Chinese products. But now I'm holding a stack of recalls from the Consumer Product Safety Commission and from the FDA on Chinese products and lead, high lead levels in their paint. So they're strategic about this, and we have to be concerned.
With the economy being so bad, and cost being a big issue, what can the average person really do about this?
Great point, and this is the heart of the challenge. On the one hand, the American consumer has lost his or her buying power because good jobs are going, The economy is tough. The 401s and the investments are down. And so Walmart looks incredibly enticing because the prices are cheap. But what people don't realize is they're paying less today, but the lower the prices they pay today in the Walmart effect, the more the long term they see their jobs, their financial security going away. Because it used to be the slogan of Walmart, all American all the time, right? You remember that. Now it's low price, blah, 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 because Walmart has most of its products from China. Where else are you going to get something that's cheap but from China? The American consumer is not used to delayed gratification. That's part of the problem. I mean, you look at the poor guy who got killed. He was run over because people wanted to save $50 on the TV. You know, when my parents grew up, if they didn't have the money to buy something, they waited till they did, and they bought something good and high quality that lasted. Now we want it yesterday. And so part of the bitter pill, if Americans want to preserve our own middle class, we're going to have to learn to be patient. Maybe you don't get the 42-inch plasma screen at this Christmas. Maybe you wait till Easter. Maybe you don't get it for another year. Instead of subsidizing an industry that has the sole goal of replacing you, the American worker, it's a hard pill to swallow when you're facing it's Christmas time. You want to put a ton of presents under the tree for your kids. So maybe you put a few less, but maybe they're American, or maybe they're better quality from other partner countries that the United States has, you know, Ireland, Europe, some other Pacific Rim countries. But when you make a conscious effort to support a policy that was sustained by your own government, your own domestic industries, in collaboration and complicity with China, you're really hurting your own country. And I know that sounds awfully red, white, and blue, but it's just practical. Every dollar you spend on a product that's built elsewhere, you're basically outsourcing the industries in the United States. And eventually, though maybe not today, you know, but maybe tomorrow, your job will be gone.
Oh, my God. Robin McPhee, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Thank you again, Dr. Savage.
This is the Savage Nation. I'll be back.
Savage.
Let's see what happened in my life. Yesterday I was very sick. Today I'm very better. I thought I was going to die yesterday. I had an allergy-related low blood sugar attack yesterday that I haven't had in my whole life. You know, I got to tell you something. You get a low blood sugar reverse if you have, like, hypoglycemia, which I have had all my life, and so I don't eat sucrose. I never eat anything with sucrose if I can avoid it. That is cane sugar. It's too rapidly absorbed, so you get the high, then you get the low, blah, blah, blah. So you got to be very careful. This was a big thing in the 70s, the low blood sugar and mood swings. I was really sick yesterday. But I got to tell you something. That night, I went home. I ate a light dinner. Got in my pajamas at 8 o'clock. Got in bed with the dogs. I watched a boxing match that was unbelievable. I fell asleep for 12 or 13 hours. I woke up healed. That's all. You got to thank God when you get up after you don't feel good. I'm not talking about serious illness here. You know, when you're mildly ill, but you're really out of control and you don't feel good, and you go home and you lay down and you close the curtains and you're in the bed with the dogs and you're watching TV and you got someone, if not taking care of you, at least they're around, you know, putting up with you. Let's put it to you, put it to you that way. And you wake up 4 a.m. totally healed. I would have to say, is this not happiness? All right, now let's look at what's on michaelsavage.com. I have several exclusives for you. One is this. SFPD is forcing detectives to undergo brainwashing by transgendered detective. Lieutenant Stephen Thorne of the Administrative Bureau is facilitating transgender community awareness training. This is a sickening story. This is a transgendered cop who flunked the lieutenant's exam but was promoted to lieutenant anyway. Now, Mayor Annie Toosome Newsom is forcing the other detectives to be brainwashed by this transgendered freak. You talk about the meltdown of a once great police department. Annie Toosome Newsom, you're a shame from top to bottom. Muslim fanatics draw up a hit list of Jews to kill. Ain't diversity grand? That's what we need, is more of them here. Bring them all in. More asylum. More liberal insanity. What's it going to take for liberals, particularly liberal Jews, to recognize that they're digging their own grave? Tune in to find out. Next story on MichaelSavage.com. Obama raises $27 million for his inaugural. That's right. I mean his coronation. Despite the economic hard times, money keeps pouring in for President-elect Hussein Obama's inaugural coronation. Al-Qaeda number two blames Obama for Gaza fight. He seems to have no friends in the radical Muslim world. The ACLU and the Quakers have joined together to sue a school to destroy the military. Read the story. Your friends at the ACLU have sued and won $240,000 for an Arab who scared airline passengers with a T-shirt that was threatening. Of course, Senate Democrats will accept Burris. It makes no difference to me. I mean, who do you think you're going to get in there, a conservative? Coleman sues over Minnesota Senate recount result. It's a dirty joke for Minnesota. Bush hides donors to library. No kidding. Hamas has advanced U.S. weapons, thanks to the State Department. China confirms woman died of bird flu in Beijing. Synagogue set ablaze. Anti-Semitic assaults soar after Gaza invasion, not in Israel, but in London, England. Of course, here in America, in Fort Lauderdale, our wonderful immigrants from the backwards 15th century world, wearing full head coverings, you liberal idiots, are screaming Jews go into the ovens again. You're getting what you asked for. You want more immigration? You want more asylum, you idiots? You're digging your own grave. And of course, the biggest story of the day is a financial one, and that is that the U.S. Department of Justice in New York City wants Bernie Madoff, swindler, jailed because he violated the terms of his parole, that is his bail. He violated the terms of his house arrest. How so? By mailing valuable jewelry worth at least $1 million to his relatives. If you read the entire PDF file, which I have in my hands, which is up on MichaelSavage.com, go to page 4. Specifically, in addition to the diamonds, the watches, the Cartier watches, the Diamond Tiffany watch, the jade necklace sent to relatives, in addition, as indicated, Bernie Madoff and or his wife sent at least two additional packages, contents unknown, to the defendant's brother and an unidentified couple in Florida. Yet Bernie Madoff walks smirking the streets of New York, while you poor blacks, if you jump a turnstile, you go right to the tombs. In America, there are several tiers of justice. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.